Hello, it is September 1st, 2015. You are looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 525 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on sports and earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. 4 weeks left in the baseball season. It's getting really close now, I think. So we'll be here with Allison today talking some baseball. Also, remind you, we'll be back later on this week with Lindsay Jones, USA Today national football writer. She's going to preview the NFL season. You should go back and check. It's college football week, so you should go back and listen to our Matt Brown podcast from last week. He was terrific. He knows college football as well as anyone. The hardest working man in the business. Hardest working boy in the business. He's young. Anyway, so check out Matt Brown's podcast. You can also, Andy Barron's podcast from the week before was a big fantasy football preview. Love you having fantasy football drafts this week. That would be a good one to listen to as well. But anyway, today we are talking baseball with Allison Futter. Also, if you're really into football, into college football this week, I do a side podcast, as I said, my dead weather to this being my Jack White solo career. It is called Waiting Since Last Saturday. It is a weekly podcast I do previewing Georgia football. And I also talk about Illinois football in there, because Illinois football is a happy thing, and who doesn't want to talk about that? Anyway, we're going to go talk with Allison now, and I'll be back later this week with Lindsay Jones. Hello, Allison. Welcome. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going? Okay, now, I find there's 4 weeks left of the season, but we're still kind of in that, you know, like rosters will expand, but we're still kind of in that, it still feels weird to... Things are starting out a little bit. Baltimore seems to be falling back. Texas moving up. But I feel like we've talked enough about pennant races for a while. There's kind of three interesting things going on. We might just kind of grab bag until we'll take a step back from the standings and so on and talk general philosophy stuff today. And by philosophy, I mean the Tao of Vin Scully. Start us off. He announced, I'm not sure why Jimmy Kimmel gets to be the one to make the Vin Scully big announcement. Maybe he's bigger in Los Angeles than I think he is.
Kind of random.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of weird too, but whatever. Certainly, Vin Scully back again. He says this year is finally his last year. And, you know, it's a shame because, of course, one of the great ironies is that you, as an Astros fan, can appreciate this. Nizola, as an Astros fan, can appreciate this. The notion that these last couple of years, Vin Scully has been, you know, the main guy and toward the end of his career, and Dodger fans, a lot of them have not been able to watch him because he has not been on a major cable provider in Los Angeles, that kind of irony of it. But to have him back, it is funny. I think about things in the world. You know, we live in a very divisive society where I feel like I could go online and say, you know what's good, guys? Air. Air is very good, and people would yell at me and scream at me and say that I was wrong. I feel like Vin Scully is perhaps the one universally beloved thing that maybe we have left.
Yeah, I mean, I think that as the passage of time helps all of this, but the fact that he has been in that position for as long as he has, that he was there calling the game when the Dodgers won the World Series in 1955, that he has really not changed over time, that he's got that kind of iconic way about him. And again, that does build with time, but there are certain things. I mean, we don't like change a lot, and he's a safety net for a lot of us. I mean, he just makes us feel better. And when you hear his voice, it's so familiar. And now with the way that broadcasting is and the fact that I can listen to the games that he's broadcasting, and I can do that from Houston, Texas, mm-hmm. and you can do that from Athens, Georgia. And so they become true national figures, and social media and digital media has just blown this whole thing up. And so, yeah, I mean, and he's an extremely kind person. So it's nice when your icons and your heroes are also very good people. And I think that that's, you know, kept him in a positive light all these years. And they're not all like that, but certainly Vin Scully is a special man. And I know that he probably wants to retire soon. And I don't think that he thought it'd be fair to fans to just say, you know, now with a month left in the regular season, like, this is my last year. So you announce it now, you say next year is going to be my last year, and you give him his farewell and his send off and all of the fun stuff that goes along with that. And then he rides off into the sunset. It's all good.
Yeah. And particularly because a large part of the fun of being a baseball fan and watching at home is yelling and being at the broadcasters and being irritated by them. You know, it's funny. I say that of love. Like, you know, I feel like some of my favorite broadcasters, you know, one of my dirty secrets that I get yelled at by people online all the time about is I actually think Joe Buck is a pretty good baseball broadcaster.
He is.
and I actually, I think he's pretty good. I actually think he's gotten better at football. I used to not really like him very much on football. I feel like he's improved on football. He'll never live down the Randy Moss thing, just ever. He's just never going to live it down. But I think he's aware of that. But certainly I feel like he is a good broadcaster. But, you know, at this point, I'm not sure if there is such a thing as a universally – the best broad – like, I find the broadcasters that are liked the most are the ones that we never talk about.
Right.
like now the job is – like, if there's a broadcaster that gets that you recognize the name of, they're like umpires anymore. Like, if you're talking about an umpire, you're talking about a broadcaster, it's probably because they've done something wrong. And so Scully is like this – I think maybe this last one – part. I think it's part of it is nostalgia, of course, but – also, you know, I mean, it's still a pleasure to listen to him call a game. He calls games by himself, which I still think is amazing. Like,
right.
He's like a broadcaster and analyst, and there's just a kindness and a warmth to him that, you know, it's amazing to think. I get, you know, people listen to this podcast, you know, I stutter and I stammer and I go off on tangents and I get confused about things, and I feel I get stressed up enough, stretched out enough. This guy has been talking live on air to millions of people for 60 years. Like, yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing he's ever said anything that, you know, I always think if you write all the time or if you talk all the time, who you are just inevitably comes out no matter how much you might try to hide it, just because you have to have that natural affinity, I think, with writing over the camera. And what we've discovered about Vin Scully over the years is he's, like, a pretty amazing guy.
Well, and he's very humble. He lets the moment happen sometimes. He's not enamored with the sound of his own voice. There's a lot of broadcasters out there that ruin great moments because they don't know when to stop talking, because they're consumed with themselves. And Vin Scully is the complete opposite from that. And, you know, but broadcasters, it goes beyond. I mean, it's a personal thing for people because they are on your televisions in your living rooms, and you are listening to and watching them, and fans do feel like they know this person. And I talked extensively with broadcasters a couple of years ago for a story I was working on, and they understand that. They understand the emotional connection because this is the most direct liaison that these fans have to the team. And you can read newspapers and you can read websites, and that's a great way to get your information. But these are actual people that you are listening to that are part of the team, and they're kind of part of your family. And, you know, I've been in baseball for a very long time, and when I first started out, of course, I was working for the Astros, and the Astros were in the same division as the Reds. And so I knew that I was going to be meeting Marty Brenneman at some point. Mm-hmm. And it was a big thrill for me because he's who I listened to growing up. But mm-hmm. when I hear his voice to this day, if I'm in the Reds press box and I hear him coming in off the elevator and I hear his voice, and it takes me right back to being 11 years old and being in the car and driving yep. home because we had to beat the traffic because we lived an hour away. So we leave the games in the seventh inning and we listen to Marty and Joe. And so his voice is like this thing that is embedded in my history, my internal history,
yeah.
and that will never go away. And I love it. I love the fact that I know him now, but he means so much to me, means so much to my family. And so that's what broadcasters are. So it's not just some guy telling you what's going on in the game. It's much more than that.
Yeah. You know, Jack Buck, you know, was that guy for us. And for me, when I was a kid, like, I loved Ozzie Smith and I loved Willie McGee. And I loved Daryl Porter. But Jack Buck was the Cardinals.
Absolutely.
Like, Jack Buck was the Cardinals. And even to this day, you know, when you look at statues outside Busch Stadium, there's Bob Gibson and Lou Brock and Stan Musial and Red Shane Deans and Jack Buck. The
yes.
Jack Buck one, and to, you know, kind of speaking to your point of the notion of when you hear their voice, your hark back, the Jack Buck statue is always doing his calls.
Yes.
So anytime you walk past the statue, you hear some of his famous calls, and it really becomes this kind of amazing thing. And it's funny, too, how they associate with specific teams because, you know, for years and years, Harry Carey was the broadcaster for the Cardinals for, like, almost two decades, longer than as he was with the Cubs, if not longer. In fact, they're actually giving away a Harry Carey bobblehead at Busch Stadium calling Stan Musial's 3,000th hit, which I think it's this week. But I have to say that, even though to my father that makes sense, he's like, yeah, I remember listening to Harry Carey, but to me that's an abomination. And I'm sure for Cubs fans it's an abomination too, because Harry Carey isn't a Cardinals guy or a White Sox guy, where he also broadcast for years. He's a Cub guy, and I think it speaks to that idea of if you were a Cubs fan Growing up, I was a Cardinals fan, but I watched tons of Cubs games. I think like we all did because of WGN. Harry Carey will just always be synonymous with the Cubs. You hear Harry Carey's voice, you think of a sunny day at Wrigley Field and a guy that sounds like he's probably been drinking for a while and that kind of fun of it. I think the best current example of this might be the Mets.
Yes.
I feel like the Mets broadcasters, the television broadcasters, I think radio broadcasters, frankly, I think the MLB at Bat app has helped with radio. I think we listen to more radio guys than we used to, just because I certainly do, just because I can listen to it while I'm walking. But for me, I feel like the closest thing to people most closely associated with their team, in a positive way, I think are the Mets broadcasters. I think Gary Thorne, Keith Hernandez, I think Ron Darling sometimes, and maybe some other people filling out, but generally Hernandez and Thorne. You are experiencing the Mets through them in a way that I think enhances your experience as a fan, and I think enhances the connection that the team has to the fans.
Yeah, you hear about that. Their names come up every time you start talking about broadcasters, like anybody starts talking about that. And the best teams out there, the Mets broadcasters come up every time. And there's longevity there. And look what is happening in Boston right now with Don Orsillo. Orsillo's
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
I don't understand, like, everything. I mean, they're being very tight-lipped about it, and I always, like, want to definitely hear, like, the other side of the story, which they're not offering, so it's hard to be objective about this. But when you are, let's see if I can put this nicely, but when you, like, have a...
Don't put it nicely. Don't put it nicely. Go.
You can't lose touch with the fan base, and you can't... You can't step out of reality and completely separate yourself from what the actual fan wants and needs, even in a bad season. And I've experienced seeing this kind of close up. But when you separate yourself because you are a business person wearing a tie that's too tight and a stuffed shirt, sitting in a boardroom, and thinking that you are so brilliant and so smart and you know exactly what you're doing and you don't actually know what you're doing at all because you have absolutely no respect for, not for the people that are paying the hundreds of thousands of dollars to have those really good seats, but when you start losing touch with the people who are sitting in the upper deck, who remember specific times in history, who are just working people trying to take their kids to games, when you stop caring about them, bad things happen. And I have no idea what the Red Sox were thinking. If they're thinking their declining ratings is because the broadcaster and bring somebody new in there, and that's going to, it's because your team is terrible.
Yeah.
And because you've made bad decision after bad decision, it's because you made those signings. And I've been watching a couple clips recently since I've been sort of reading up on this of Jerry Remy and Don Orsillo. And I'm laughing. I don't pay any attention to this team at all. And I'm laughing at the rapport that they had, how much fun they were having during blowouts, keeping things interesting. And Don is just he's just engaging. I don't understand. But what the point is that they have this petition. There's 50,000 people. People are in angst over this.
Yeah.
Why did you have, you just had to do something. You had like 30 minutes in a day that wasn't occupied with something that you're trying to fix. So you did this. And I just... people never learn from the past, and this doesn't work. When you take a beloved broadcaster and you fire them, it never works.
Yeah, and it's funny. A lot of times the broadcaster doesn't even have to be good to be beloved. I think of I think Hawk Harrelson is probably the most famous example of this. I'm not a White Sox fan, so when I have a White Sox game on, I just can't listen to him. I just can't do it.
Yeah.
Like, it takes me out of the experience. I just have a really hard time listening to him. But if I were a White Sox fan, like, he would be how I experience baseball. I think White Sox fans may even know he's not a great broadcaster, but they will let go of him over their dead bodies.
Okay, so that's what I was always wondering. So White Sox fans really like him. It's everybody else, because all I hear is just venom when they talk about it. But the White Sox fans would
White Sox fans love him, and I'm sure some White Sox fans don't like him, but I think, and I'm sure, but to me, I think that is, I think that's part of it. It's why those silly catchphrases and home run calls catch on. Like now, John Rooney is the Cardinals radio broadcaster, and he says it's a goner when they hit a home run. And that is kind of cheesy. It's silly. It feels like a little Anchorman and whammy sort of silliness. But like I now get excited when I hear that home run call. Because I associate it with Cardinals home runs, and those make me happy. And I feel like Hawk Harrelson is like that in a lot of ways, you know. And I actually finally got the Hawk Harrelson thing a little bit. Remember when Mark Burley threw his perfect game, and the call. Like, literally, Harrelson's call is him yelling, Alexei, because he hit the ball to the shortstop, Alexei Ramirez. So his call of the perfect game is, Alexei, oh! And it's kind of perfect. Like, I kind of love it. Like, this, because it is, you know, I'm obviously not paid to be a broadcaster, but that's what I would do if I was watching my team throw a perfect game. I would just, like, yell it and get excited. Right. And I think the best broadcasters... I think maybe this is why Harrelson isn't one of them, but this is why you have a home field advantage in that way. The best broadcasters can mix a professionalism with that kind of hometown thing, and it's why I think there's really no national guy in any sport, really. I wrote about this last year. I think Mike Breen, the national NBA broadcaster, is probably the closest, but I think otherwise no real national broadcaster can really be liked, because half of the reason you like broadcasters is because it's your guy.
That's the one thing that really makes me nuts about the postseason.
Totally.
It just switches right over to the national broadcasters, and they're very good. But
yours.
I just find it so unfortunate that there's absolutely no anecdotal information that's going to be given at all. They're not going to be talking about anything that may have happened during the season that might not be in the extensive research that the researchers do for them. And it takes nothing away from them. Now, TBS did add a local broadcaster as kind of like a sideline reporter in some of these playoff games. And I thought that was wonderful. And you would just think that maybe someday they would have a third man in the booth and it would be one of the local broadcasters. I hate the fact, during the times that the Astros were in the playoffs, that Bill Brown and Jim Deshays, that was a paid vacation for them. They didn't get to participate in anything, and they were such a huge part of the whole fan experience of watching these games on TV, and they just go away, and it's just so unfortunate. It needs to be fixed.
Yeah, I think you're right, and because it's funny, when you've been watching a team all year and you see a national broadcaster, and they'll start telling the anecdote that has been picked over,
right,
500 times, and every fan of the team is so sick.
Yeah.
Hearing about it. And I think this matters more in a sport like baseball, which is frankly very regional. Like, it's a regional sport. I think sometimes people use that as a cudgel with which to beat baseball. But I think this is actually one of the great things about baseball, is it's a regional sport that rewards familiarity and rewards repetition and routine. And so when you get to the postseason and all of a sudden, I love Dick Stockton. Everybody loves Dick Stockton. He's a great, I hear his voice and it feels like a big event. But, you watch him in the playoffs, it's clear he has not watched a single game of the team that he's broadcasting all season. And that's not even his fault. It's just kind of a situation that you've put him in a little bit, that what might seem incredibly remarkable to him about this crazy anecdote about, about Evan Longoria or something. Rays fans have just heard it constantly and want to hear their guys. And I think you're right. It's funny because I wonder if they'll find a way to do this. Though I'm having so much fun talking about this, I think we should just make the whole show broadcasters. We're already halfway through. Let's just keep talking about this. So
I wonder why they haven't, what is stopping them doing something like that? It's clearly not money. So,
and it works in college basketball. In college basketball, I wonder, just because they have the second channel. Remember, for the national championship game in the Final Four, they have the broadcasters of Kentucky and Wisconsin and Duke. They have them on side broadcasts, on True TV or something. They'll have them do it. And Illinois is never going to make the Final Four. But if they did, I would love to hear that. I'd love to hear the Illinois guys on the national broadcast. You would think there'd be a way for them to figure this out for baseball, because you're right, it's something specific to baseball. I don't think people would care about the NFL announcers doing it as much, or maybe the NBA a little bit. But baseball, you're right, it feels like something we should find a way to do it.
I mean, it's not even like you have to formulate some big plan. It's just put a chair in the booth. Get an extra chair. You can have the one sitting next to me. I know the chairs are kind of scarce during the playoffs because the press boxes are packed, but order another chair. Just put them in there. It takes very little. I mean, it's not like you have to do a lot of prep work. This would be their 170th game of broadcasting. I find the the fact that, you know, they haven't done anything about it yet, a little, I don't know, I don't have a lot of patience for that. But of course, I'm not, you know, involved in every little intricacy that goes into making a television broadcast in the postseason. But just
yet,
get these guys in there, please. Come
yet.
On.
Yet. But yet you're not. Soon you'll be running it. And it's funny, you know, to me, I think all the proof that you need that baseball fans like this is in MLB TV itself. The fact that I can mute whatever broadcasters I'm listening to and sync them up to my radio guys on a television broadcast. To me, that is the fact that that people realize that's something that they wanted is a pretty good sign of just how important that these broadcasters are for these games. And you're right. I didn't even think about the postseason, but you're exactly right. Like postseason, it just kills me to like listen to people that just have nothing to do with my sport. And that's the thing. You know, I even look at a guy like Tim McCarver, because you know Tim McCarver is now he now does Cardinals games.
Right.
He is analyst for like 20, 25 Cardinals games a year.
Yeah.
And I have to say, when he was doing national games, I didn't quite dislike him as much as a lot of people disliked him, but certainly I understood why sometimes people got frustrated with Tim McCarver. I find him a delight now, I have to tell you, on Cardinals broadcast, because A, there's two different things. One, I'm just more used to him because he's doing all of these games. And B, there is... That, you know, he's more relaxed. I remember when Joe Buck was doing national games, he no longer does Cardinal games. But when he did Cardinal games, he was a different broadcaster when he was doing
really?
Local games. He was, because he was just more relaxed. He didn't feel this need to, like, nail every call. You know, he was a very relaxed broadcaster in a way that I think you probably can't be on national broadcast. Just because you have a lot more masters to serve. Whereas when you are doing a local broadcast, you know, McCarver is a different broadcaster on local broadcast than he is. Joe Garagiola used to be like this when he used to do some Cardinal games. They're just different broadcasters locally than they are nationally. And so I wonder about that. Like it's a perfect example of why do we – but again, I can't – maybe that's in my brain. Like maybe I'm thinking that because they're familiar with me and I watch them every night. But I don't think there's any question that you learn to know these guys. I mean, like, listen, Deshays, man. Deshays is, like, beloved there, right?
Oh, for sure. I mean, when he left, at that time where the franchise was, and this kind of speaks more to where the franchise was at the time, but he was the second most popular Astro behind Jose Altuve. And that is not an exaggeration. Of course, nobody else knew who anybody was on the team. But JD, not only did he spend, you know, part of his career here, but he's just engaging. He's hilariously funny. He's very clever. And he had such a rapport with Bill Brown. And they really built a cult following here. It was very upsetting when JD left. But yeah, I mean, that's a prime example of just, you know, somebody who just ingratiates themselves into a fan base, and it's hard to let them go when they move on.
Yeah, he does. Like he is. Like, it's amazing in the span of like how many years been retired? 10 years, 15 years. He's become like the face of the franchise through some tumultuous periods.
Right.
If like I don't know if you know that or not, but there was like some ups and downs in the Astros organization over the last few years.
JD's actually been out of baseball for 20 years. As a
20 years, 20 years. Because
then 2 years later, he became a broadcaster, and he was like so raw and not very good at it, not good at it in the least bit. And they just kind of threw him out there, and gosh, he evolved into just an unbelievable broadcaster. So it worked out.
But he didn't lose that thing that made him think he'd be good in the first place, which I think is interesting because, like, you know, the Cardinals example, that would be Mike Shannon. Mike Shannon was a player for the Cardinals for years and years and then became the color guy shortly after he retired. And now he'll just broadcast whole games by himself, like much like Vin Scully. Like, he's now a broadcast guy rather than an analyst because he's so comfortable with the fan base that now – and again, he kind of like Hawk Harrelson. I know people that have listened to Cardinals broadcasts that aren't Cardinals fans that don't know Mike Shannon, and they're like, who is this drunk Texan – not saying he's famously for his one of his famous quotes is, you know, he said he talked about how unpopular Mark McGwire was with the Cardinals. It was something like Mark McGwire, and he said, man, the last time anyone was that popular with anyone, they put him on a cross. I'm like, it's a weird thing to say, like, easy.
Yeah, stuff. That's not going to go
but
very
like,
far.
But see, that's the thing, that like these are things that we thought that, you know, that now I hear that and I'm like, oh, Shannon, you're so crazy. There's a whole there's a page of Shannonisms that fans keep. But like, you know, if you don't know Shannon, you just hear that, boy, what a stupid person. And I think that speaks to how these guys become like our local warmth. And you know, it's funny too. And I think this is kind of interesting. And to speak to something that was going on this weekend, There is a lot of this is familiarity. We saw Jessica Mendoza doing the game, doing the ESPN game last night. I watched a little bit of it just because I had to stop watching because frankly, ESPN, the box on the ESPN game
Right,
zone,
you hate the box.
it makes me insane.
Right.
And so it drives me absolutely. I don't even think it's bad. It's just it exists just to upset people. And so I don't like things that do that, like Twitter, for example. So I think I think she did a good job. I mean, I saw nothing wrong with what she was doing. And certainly I think there's, as anytime any woman does anything in sports, even, no matter what, there's going to be assheads that come out of the woodwork. But I also think there's an element of anytime there's someone new in a booth, they're going to get yelled at no matter what. I think she certainly faced a lot more and probably will continue to do so. But I do think that even in the booth before that, Schilling and Kruk, anytime they say anything, people are going to yell at them because they're not their announcers.
Right. I mean, Schilling is just, as we say, what's the word we use? Polarizing, which
Yes,
is a nice way of saying that people
everybody
hate
hates him.
him. He's an idiot. I enjoy the broadcasts with those three guys. I think that Schilling is, I don't know. I think he needs to tone it down a little bit at times. I think Krucky is hilarious, and I just love what he brings to the whole thing. But they're not everybody's cup of tea. And I mean, really, what Jessica was doing was just being an analyst. She was just analyzing the baseball game she was watching. She has a very long history in softball. She knows the game extremely well, and that's what all she was doing. I found it to be really great and pleasant. I find it a little disheartening that it's 2015 and we're just now talking about this as being the first one. But you don't necessarily I mean, she's a former player, and no, she's not a former big leaguer. But she is a former player who knows a lot about the game. And I mean, that's analysts are former players. And so they're all men, obviously. But I don't know. I didn't hear a lot of, negativity about her. There's the idiots that are on, the idiots are the ones that you hear about. They're the ones on the message boards. They're in the comment sections underneath stories, and they're on Twitter. But for them, they're not speaking for the majority, and I don't know. I thought she was great.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, I have to say, I feel like she hit a strike zone of an analyst that I've been wanting for. The great part about her as an analyst is that, because my least favorite part, I like an analyst who can talk about the game and what this pitch selection was and what they were thinking in this. I like that kind of analyst. What I don't like is the kind of analyst who's like, "Oh yeah, remember the times that we had back in the dugout in 98 and just all the like this contributing to this kind of clubbish atmosphere that I think is like if you're gonna I've long argued that frankly I think you could have a really good analyst that did not actually play the game at all. And I think if you had the right kind of broadcaster, I think you and the right kind of knowledge base, you could have someone that did that. But if I'm not going to get that, I will certainly take someone like her who knows the sport and analyzes it from a player's perspective, but doesn't weigh it down with, frankly, John Kruk and oh yeah, me and Dalty or me and Lee and Lenny back in the day. To me, I'd rather I. She to me seems like a very good compromise for what I really want as an analyst, which is frankly, I mean, I mean, come on, I want my favorite writers to be. I want all my favorite baseball writers to be those people. But all to I will to me, she is a pro in the right way in that, as opposed to the one that kind of relies like any good analyst. Like I think John Smoltz is really good. I think John Smoltz is really good for the exact same reason that she's good, because she comes prepared and isn't just spend the whole time talking about how Greg Maddux used to pee on people in the shower.
Right.
Which,
And Smoltz is, he doesn't have any of that in him where he's like, where he just kind of reduces himself to that. And he's very analytical when he talks, and when he gives anecdotal information, it's all about things that happened that you would want to dissect that are happening now. And that's exactly what she did. And Dan Schulman's such a strong lead broadcaster that basically I think anybody could work with him and it would be a success. But I really liked them together last night.
Yeah, I thought they were good too, and I think I actually don't even I don't really like Kruk much, but I'll confess I don't hate Schilling as an analyst.
I don't either.
I actually don't like as maybe a as perhaps a political influencer, he is perhaps not my cup of tea. But certainly as a broadcaster, I like that he's a little bit like, let's face it, like Schilling is a little wacky. Like he's a little off, in a way that we liked as a player that sometimes drives us crazy, drove us crazy as a player. But like, there's something, he's One thing I don't think anyone would say about Curt Schilling, even people that absolutely hate Curt Schilling, is that he's just another ball player. He's just another jock. He is, for better or worse, Schilling is a more it has more going on in his brain than just jock stuff.
Right.
And I think he's enough of a wild card that I feel like sometimes he'll take strong stances without doing a I'm taking a strong stance. He just takes a strong stance because he truly believes it, even if it's kind of crazy, which I kind of like. I don't like it about the political side, but certainly I like it baseball wise. And I feel like as an analyst like that, you know, well, the person that people generally consider the best broadcaster of at least the biggest broadcaster and the most interesting broadcaster of our time, a lot of times is Howard Cosell, and people despised
right.
Howard Cosell. Like, now we all talk like, oh, Howard Cosell, what a beloved figure, but, like, he was despised, like, people hated Howard Cosell, which to me, I think there's sometimes some good in that, to have, like, a national guy that people gets on people's nerves a little bit. But in lieu of that, with him gone, I thought she did a great job. And I think I've actually been so impressed how much I've liked Smoltz. I feel like a good example is Verducci. I think Tom Verducci is a great example of what I'm talking about, the idea of someone who did not play the game but comes ready.
Oh, well, he's prepared. He's the most knowledgeable baseball writer in history, in my opinion. I mean, he is the gold standard of everything. Yeah, he transitioned very well into that. He's always been, you know, well-spoken and had just a way just when you're conversing with him in person. But it's really, yes, he is prepared. But that's a lot of preparation. That's just a lot of just things that have already been in his head that he just knows. I love his takes on baseball. I love his outlook just through his writing. I just think that he's as good as it gets because he is not afraid to speak his mind, and he's so definitive and so sure of that what he's saying is absolutely 100% accurate. I just think he's great.
Why I like him more as a broadcaster. I like him as a writer too. He's Tom Verducci, but certainly I think in recent years, and you and I disagree on this a little bit, but like I think he's maybe gotten a little bit too moralist about PEDs and a little bit too traditionalist about some things in baseball. But I think that's because, you know, as a writer, that's his. Yeah, that's his vein. He comes out with stronger, firmer takes in writing than he does in the broadcast. Where a broadcast, I think, because it's not, I think he comes back 100, like he's opinionated on broadcast, but always in like a I'm aware I'm in the booth with a former player type of way. And it's funny, like I like Harold Reynolds. We all know Harold Reynolds, but I thought it was fascinating during some games last year. There were times where like you'd have the breakdown of a pitch, of an at bat. And Verducci was doing it. And I'm like, wait, I thought the player did that. Like, and I think that spoke to how well prepared he was. So the
former players don't like the notion that anybody could possibly break down, a baseball play if they didn't actually play the game. It's paranoia on their end. It's an insecurity, like, oh God, maybe if you guys know how to do, talk about this stuff, then where do I fit into the world? So,
Which is why, it, to me, speaks all the well to how prepared Verducci is. And I've been surprised just how much I've liked. I mean, to me, that booth, that analyst booth of Smoltz and Verducci, which I think we've seen at some games on the MLB Network, I think is really good. And I was not expecting that to be. I'm really just enamored with Smoltz. I think he's so good that, like,
yes.
I just love the idea that John Smoltz is, like, I could see him being the guy, like, the lead World Series analyst.
That would be nice
for like a long time. So
absolutely, there's no reason why he shouldn't. There's not. I mean, who's better than him? Yeah, who would be? Who's more qualified?
But well, I mean, right now he's not doing it. So maybe we have to get him there first, and then because I can certainly see him being that guy for a long time. But so point is, but I think what the main takeaway we've gotten here is that it should be you and me.
That would be. Let's do it.
Let's do it. I think just.
Where do I need to send the letter?
Those of you still with us, just took your iPhone and threw it somewhere. So I apologize for that. But all right, well, so we'll do this again next week. We're getting close now. I'm very excited because soon, once playoff stuff starts going, I thought we might even do short little 10-minute series previews or that sort of stuff. We'll figure out what we're gonna do later on. But I'm excited. I think this may be our last we don't need to talk about the actual games podcast because I think it's starting to get pretty serious now.
It is getting serious. A week ago, I thought the Diamondbacks were going to get into this pennant race.
They ran into a buzzsaw called the St. Louis Cardinals is what happened to them.
That was just pathetic, man.
And meanwhile, the Cubs, it's funny because the no-hitter that the Cubs threw kind of obscured the fact that they had a pretty lousy week. And they're still hanging in the wild card because the Dodgers and Giants kept losing. The Giants kept losing. But generally speaking, the Cubs were challenged on a road trip and did not necessarily step up to that challenge. But I think they're still safe. It doesn't matter because they throw no hitter and everyone's happy about them. I'm just trying to rip on the Cubs. So
I just can't believe the Dodgers are actually going to get to the postseason. And it's not even a good team.
Yeah, I know.
It just blows my mind.
Which means they're going to win the World Series this year.
Of course.
It's the way it works. Anyway, all right, Allison, we'll do this again next week. But Neil Pubby, after Labor, have a wonderful Labor Day, for crying out loud.
Oh, you too. That's
where are you going? Are you grilling out, or where are you going?
Oh my God, isn't it like in 7 days?
Yeah, it's next weekend. Next weekend is Labor Day, man.
Well, last time, so he asked me Memorial Day what I was doing, and I think I was going to change my air filters. So I'm going to change my air filters again.
Yeah, I guess it's about that time. It's about that time. Well, it's good. Well, I'm glad I have this podcast to remind you about basic household maintenance. But yeah, it is game week here in Athens. College football season starts on Saturday. So this entire town has basically been napping since November, waiting for the opportunity to tailgate again. So it returns this week. So yeah. Now everybody's lives are happy again. All right, Allison, we'll do this again next week. Thank you for playing around with me, and I'll talk to you next week.
Okay, thanks, Bill.
All right, thanks to Allison Futter, the National Baseball Correspondent for MLB.com. Follow her on Twitter at Allison Futter, AllysonFootter. This is a Willie's Experience podcast. Footer and Leech edition. Music is by the Sundogs, who have a new album out, by the way. So everyone go get the new Sundogs album. I'll mention that in the next podcast. I just went to a game with the lead singer of the band on Sunday, so I had to mention him. Please rate and review us on iTunes. I will be back on Thursday with Lindsey Jones, the national NFL correspondent for USA Today. We are going to preview the NFL season. Have a wonderful week, all. See you.